It's a Tech Thursday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Vicki Boyd will be in reporting from the Salinas Technology Field Day. Taylor Chalstrom will have a report about canines that can sniff out diseases in grapes and other agricultural crops. And I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news headlines with regional ag news kicking things off right after this.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In regional agricultural news, as California toils through a third consecutive drought year, many Sacramento Valley farmers, well known for supporting waterfowl that stop along the Pacific Flyway, are being left high and dry. The farmers are facing water supply challenges that are worse this season than in the previous dry years. This drought is hitting Northern California really hard and in some unprecedented ways, according to Ellen Hennick, Director of Water Policy for the Public Policy of Institute of California, speaking last week on drought at a meeting of the California State Board of Food and Agriculture. That is significant for Northern California, obviously, because entire irrigation districts are just not planting rice and entire communities on the west side of the Sacramento Valley are going to be hit hard. Drought conditions are different this year due to particular impacts in the north state. Hennick said Northern California is the wetter part of the state and the reservoir supplies water to a lot of other parts of the state. Unlike in previous years when Sacramento Valley farmers have been able to make water available through transfer markets, she says she does not think they're going to see a whole lot of that this year. U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, which oversees the Federal Central Valley Project, announced this spring that no water would be delivered to agricultural water contractors north and south of the Delta. The agency announced it would only supply water to meet health and safety needs. Tim Johnson, president and CEO of the California Rice Commission, said rice growers are facing profound challenges. He said this by far is the most significant impact on the industry in his 27-year tenure. Sacramento Valley rice growers are expected to grow 250,000 acres of crop this year. He said that represents half of the 500,000 acres that are typically grown. The last time rice growers produced such an amount was in 1956. He pointed to an economic impact by Dan Sumner, an agricultural economist at the University of California, Davis, saying lost jobs this year due to a reduction in planting of crops in the Sacramento Valley is estimated to be $14,300 and $1.3 billion in lost economic value, adding that the rice sector accounts for one-third of these losses. Colusa County Agricultural Commissioner Anastasia Allen said, seeing what is going on firsthand in the county this year has been devastating. The county has gone from an annual average of 150,000 acres of rice to barely more than 7,000 acres this year. The Sacramento Valley is one of the state's growing regions for processing tomatoes. The Food and Agriculture Board heard from Yolo County farmer Frank Mueller, who said that the California Tomato Growers Association expects the season's processing tomato crop for the state to be lower than 11.7 million tons projected by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the National Agricultural Statistics Service. The California Rice Commission has a number of seats up for election for a three-year term on the board. You can nominate yourself or someone you believe would make a great board member. Forms are due back by July 15th. Available seats look like this. In District Number 2, one alternate in Colusa County. In District Number 3, one member and three alternate seats for Glynn and Tehama counties and counties north thereof. In District Number 4, there are three member and three alternate seats for Yuba and Sutter County. And in District 5, there are three member seats and three alternate seats for Sacramento, San Joaquin, Placer, and Yolo counties and counties south thereof. For more information and nomination forms, call 916-387-2264. Napa County supervisors are leaning towards providing at least $5.4 million in county money for wildfire fuel reduction, though at what cost to road repair and other possible projects remains to be seen. The community's five-year fuel reduction plan calls for $9.9 million worth of projects for the coming year. Measure L, the quarter-cent wildfire prevention sales tax on the June 7th ballot, was the county's preferred answer to provide much of that money. Measure L has 58% of the vote in initial returns, but needs two-thirds majority or at least 66.66% to pass. That means year two of the wildfire protection plan will likely have to be funded without the tax if it is funded. Supervisors have held budget hearings for the 2022 to 2023 fiscal year that begins July 1st. They seem to favor giving at least $5.4 million in general fund money for fuel reduction, perhaps as a starting point. County staff recommended giving $5.4 million so the fuel reduction work can continue after July 1st. Then the Board of Supervisors can revisit the issue in August when several issues that could affect the overall county budget become clearer. Supervisor Alfredo Pedroza said the county cannot walk away from its commitment to keep the community safe, even though Measure L looks likely to lose, but the county must take the wildfire prevention money from other possible projects. Still another possibility is $32.5 million in hazard mitigation grants that the county is seeking that are in various stages of review from the Office of Emergency Services. County supervisors are working on a $600 million budget. Much of that money must be spent in predetermined ways according to state and federal rules, with the $250 million general fund portion providing the most discretion. The county budget pays for services ranging from wildfire prevention to libraries to the justice system to health and social services to rural planning and environmental services and road repairs. A California startup is rolling out a product that it claims will keep fruits and vegetables longer. The company is called SavorPak. One version for berries is a packet that is adhesively attached to the lid of a clamshell to capture condensation. The patches are colder than ambient and therefore they attract moisture, according to Grant Stafford, co-CEO of SavorPak. When an item is temporarily unrefrigerated, the package attracts ambient moisture, keeping it off the fruit. Another version in the form of a packet is placed in bags of fresh greens to achieve the same effect. The company claims that its products can extend the life of fresh fruits and vegetables for anywhere from 4 to 14 days. SavorPak says its product is approved by the Food and Drug Administration and has a food-safe construction. Furthermore, the company's website says they are currently testing all natural ingredients that they can add to SavorPak in order to detect foodborne pathogens like Salmonella, E. coli, and Listeria. According to an article in Fast Company, golden berries, a South American fruit, lasted at least 10 days longer than usual. Persian cucumbers lasted as long as 28 days. The technology was developed by SavorPak co-CEO Bill Bergen, who has also invented environmental control technology for jets and spacecraft. Originally, he designed it for his own use after disappointments over wilted salads at lunch. Due to the pandemic, the entrepreneurs worked with the food service industry to create similar packets to keep prepared dishes from being soggy during delivery. This version is kept frozen until use and then placed on the lids of to-go containers. Customers include food service giant Sysco. SavorPak expects to bring out the version for produce later this year.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Up next on a My Ag Life Daily News Report, Vicki Boyd reports from the Salinas Technology Field Day.
To say that technology development is moving at breakneck speed is an understatement. Blink and your smartphone operating system may be obsolete. Agriculture is experiencing the same transformation as companies incorporate robotics and artificial intelligence into machinery to address tight and at times costly labor supplies. The University of California hosted a recent Ag Tech Field Day at Hartnell College in Salinas so growers could see some of the latest rigs in action. Roughly 8 companies put their machines through the pace. The technology ranged from GPS-guided mechanical cultivators to mechanical lettuce thinners to weeders guided by artificial intelligence. One unit from Carbon Robotics was even self-driving and used artificial intelligence to differentiate between weeds and the crop. When it found a weed, a laser would zap it. Richard Smith, a UC Cooperative Extension farm advisor specializing in vegetables and weed science in Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito counties, helped organize the event with colleague Steve Fenimore. Smith said with the ever-changing tech landscape, he wanted to give growers the latest view of some of what's on the market and what's in the pipeline.
Right now is just an amazing time in terms of the development of ag technology. These automated weeders, precision sprayers, and the laser weeders. I mean, it's just, there is so much technology that has come out in just the last 2-3 years. When you hear the stories about these companies, the laser company started in 2018. You know, this TensorField machine over here, they started, I don't know, three years ago. I mean, you know, so it's kind of what made America great. You know, we kind of forget that sometimes, is that, you know, people had these ideas. They were able to find funding, you know, through those various ways that they do that nowadays, and get these companies up and running and develop a product that is answering our problems. Because we don't have the labor to conduct weeding operations as much as we used to. And so these weeders are coming at a perfect time. So we just feel very strongly that this is a big part of the future. And you can tell by the response that people are interested in it.
Smith said he was surprised at the turnout, but he said that just shows how interested growers are in technology.
Normally at something like this, we figure we'd get 70 to 90 people. But when we started to realize, we were getting calls from all over the place. And we realized, you know what, we might have like 150 to 200. And I don't know what the numbers are, but it's in that range, you know. It's a pretty good turnout. The people from Clemson, and you know, they have a project, so that we kind of knew they were coming. But, you know, some of the other people coming from, you know, we had a researcher from Cornell University and people from Washington and people from San Diego. So people came from all over, in addition to having a very good turnout from our local growing community.
The University of Arizona and the Yuma Ag Center hosted an Ag Tech Field Day in Yuma last October. But Smith said the Salinas event was separate, although he said they do work closely with their Yuma colleagues. This isn't the first time that UC has hosted an Ag Tech Field Day either. Smith said they do so periodically as technology advances.
This is for the Salinas area, and we have worked with Mark Siemens, who was here also, and he's put on a similar event down there, and so we definitely picked his brain about how to do this. And well, we've had them over the years. 11 years ago, we had one where we showed the first automated thinner. And at that field day, which was also very well attended, the growers were so interested in that technology, they wanted to buy that prototype that Mark Siemens brought to demonstrate. And then over the years, we've had other little smaller events. But 3 years ago, we had one of these, but we got rained out. But again, the pent-up interest is amazing. No, people are very, very interested, and the growers are very, very interested, because this is a key to them staying in business, because they don't have the labor that they once had, and this technology is addressing those issues.
Not only did the field day draw a big crowd from the Salinas area, but a group of researchers from throughout the country attended. They are part of a multi-state research grant looking at automated weeding for specialty crops. Matt Bertucci, a University of Arkansas assistant professor of sustainable fruit and vegetable production, said the field day gave him an opportunity to see several machines working in one location. The day before, he and several other researchers had visited area farms to see further demonstrations and talk to tech company representatives.
We're interested to see all these automated and robotic weeders. We have a lot of specialty crop growers that, you know, are looking to, they don't have the opportunity to see some of these new technologies that are already driven by capitalist markets to be out here in California. So we're looking to see, are they suitable for the specialty crop producers that we have in Arkansas on a smaller scale?
Salinas is just down the road from Silicon Valley, so growers have ready access to technology experts. But Fayetteville, which is home to the University of Arkansas, is a half a continent away. Bertucci said that wasn't a concern because they have university experts who could help. What he said he hopes to find are grower-friendly automated systems that might benefit the smaller-scale producers in Arkansas.
I think we've got specialists. We have engineers who could help with things like that. But what I'm interested in is grower-friendly automated systems. You know, the productions that we see here, you know, I felt like I was in Arkansas Delta with soybean and rice, that I saw just wall-to-wall cauliflower or cabbage or strawberries in a way that we don't have extensive acreage. We have smaller scale diversified farms that might be doing tomatoes next to blackberries, next to blueberries. And so I'm just interested to see, do we have viable automated systems that could work in these diverse systems and that are economically justified?
This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
Unsure of your navel orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard and hull split from navel orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed, broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
In national agricultural news, the House of Representatives has sent the Ocean Shipping Reform Act to President Joe Biden for signature. Agriculture groups responded positively, heralding the legislation and improves the oversight of ocean shipping. The bill will address many maritime disruptions, obstructing the import and export of U.S. products at American ports over the past several years. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall says that he was pleased to team up with President Biden to urge passage and look forward to him quickly signing the Ocean Shipping Reform Act. U.S. Meat Export Federation President and CEO Dan Hallstrom welcomed the passage, saying this legislation takes important steps forward in improving the shipping services available to U.S. exporters. American Feed Industry Association CEO Constance Coleman adds, passage of the Ocean Shipping Reform Act signals a course correction that will enable the industry to continue providing these essential goods to the global marketplace in a timely, cost-efficient way. The Department of Agriculture has extended the comment deadline regarding its access to fertilizer competition and supply chain concerns Federal Register notice. Published in a Federal Register in March, the previous deadlines for comments were May 16th and June 15th. USDA extended the comment deadline another month to July 15th. Andy Green, USDA Senior Advisor for Fair and Competitive Markets, says the new deadline allows commenters to provide additional feedback regarding the role of capacity expansion and related strategies to directly enhance competition in a fertilizer marketplace. Through the effort, USDA is seeking information on what obstacles exist to financing and developing new fertilizer capacity, expanding fertilizer manufacturing, and what other threats the fertilizer sector faces. In March, USDA announced plans for a $250 million investment in grants to support additional fertilizer production for farmers to address rising costs and spur competition. Fertilizer prices have more than doubled since last year. High crop prices should help most growers to eke out a profit this year, but a much smaller one than last season. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has the story.
The latest government inflation figures show the general inflation rate running about 8.5% higher than a year ago. But for farmers buying what they need to produce a crop,
the lowest year-over-year inflation farmers are seeing is twice that on seed, with most commodity categories many times higher.
That's Dr. Joe Outlaw, Texas A&M economist. He told a House hearing that fertilizer prices have been 13 to 40% higher.
While some producers were able to benefit by locking in input prices early in 2021 for this year's crop, most indicated very little ability to do so.
So Dr. Outlaw says crop producers will likely see profit margins squeezed but not eliminated. Of course, last year, farmers got quite a bit of income from government disaster and COVID assistance payments, but USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer says farmers will likely see government ad hoc payments drop drastically this year.
They're expected to fall $15.5 billion, or 57%.
Net income could fall an average of 4.5%, still enough with current high crop prices for most farmers to register a profit. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The World Trade Organization Agriculture Committee, as part of this week's ministerial conference, is holding discussions on improving global agricultural trade in the future. Dave Samuelson, American Farm Bureau Federation's Senior Director of Government Affairs, says they are looking at what can be addressed during the next ministerial conference 2 years from now.
And so you've got discussions ongoing about domestic support levels, market access, how to improve that, public stock holding, which has become a real contentious issue that deals with countries that may subsidize grain production then hold it. Definitely has a trade distorting impact depending how it's used, so there's a lot of discussion on that. And also the safeguard mechanisms, how countries can respond to import surges.
Another hot topic, Samuelson says, is food security.
They're looking to make sure the agricultural trade keeps flowing, trying to get all the countries to agree to stop from imposing any export restrictions on agricultural products. Some countries have done that, but as they saw back in 2008, 2009, it just makes it worse. So there's a real effort to get countries to say they're not going to engage in any kind of export bans. And also, they want to make sure that countries are freely selling product into the World Food Program for humanitarian assistance.
Finally, discussions also include improving standards.
One is new sanitary and phytosanitary standards, try to reaffirm and get countries committed to making sure their standards are science-based, don't have protectionist or restrictive features. And then there's also transparency. It's the way the organization upholds the standards and agreements that all the members signed on to is to notify what they're doing and making sure the countries are exceeding their limits on trade-distorting subsidies and other measures that impact trade.
That's Dave Samuelson, AFBF Senior Director of Government Affairs. Living Greens Farm, one of the largest indoor vertical aeroponic farms in the U.S. that provides year-round fresh salads, salad kits, microgreens, and herbs, has announced a new independent director of the board of directors, a new vice president of sales, and a plant engineer. Kevin Murphy has been appointed as an independent director for the board. He will be integral in strategic planning and policies. He has spent over 37 years in a packaged good industries and is widely known for his strong strategic marketing skills, having served on management teams that drove impressive corporate growth. He recently retired as chief executive officer for Incredible Foods Incorporated and president and CEO of Fishery Products International. Katie Grady has joined the team as the new vice president of sales. She has 11 years of progressively increasing responsibilities at Hain Celestial Group, most recently as VP of sales, Central Region Grocery, Personal Care, and Baby, managing a $250 million sales portfolio with customers such as Whole Foods and Target. And Jerry Gray will be joining a team as a plant engineer out of the Indiana plant, which is currently under construction. He has over 25 years of engineering experience in aerospace, automotive, railroad, and food and beverage with well-known industry leaders.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Up next, Taylor Chalstrom talks about canines that can sniff out diseases in grapes and other agricultural crops.
Many have known that dogs have been used in studies and research to detect diseases in humans, but now a company is using them to detect important diseases in agricultural crops. BD Canine is launching a detection service where dogs can sniff out leaf roll 3 and red blotch virus in grapevines. These pathogens can infect all wine, table, and rootstock grapes, and they occur in grape production areas around the world and are responsible for causing over $70 billion of damage in the U.S. alone. The dogs are able to pinpoint infected vines before the pathogens have a chance to spread, and this method might be as accurate or more accurate than traditional vineyard screening methods.
Dogs have evolved to view the world through their nose, just like we've evolved to view the world through our eyes. They see everything as a scent profile. They greet each other by scent. They recognize mates by scent. They find food by scent. They recognize danger by scent. This is why they're domesticated, because humans have been using this talent for quite a while. For a lot of different purposes, disease detection is just an extension of that, both on the human side and on the agriculture side. The first guy that started doing this was a USDA scientist named Tim Gottwald. And he thought, because we have so much trouble finding diseases in trees, maybe we should think about something different. And that isn't to say there aren't good tests out there. There are very good tests out there. You can do PCR tests. You can do ELISA tests. All of them are very effective and 100% efficient at detecting a pathogen if you sample exactly the right tissue. And most of the time that works out pretty good. But when you're talking about diseases of trees in particular, or larger perennial crops, that can get difficult because diseases don't distribute themselves evenly through the entire tree. So now you're picking 20, 40 leaves off of something that has 20,000 leaves. And it's a needle in the haystack, and you're only taking a small portion of that. What dogs do differently is they view that entire tree as one big holistic sample. And they take a non-destructive sniff of that, and they can tell you whether or not that tree has any disease anywhere in it. And that can be roots, that can be trunk, that can be leaves. Doesn't matter to the dog. So dogs, we've had great success getting them to be about 98 to 99% accurate, depending on the disease. They're not 100% accurate because they're biological organisms, but they have a huge advantage in that they get to sample the entire tree all at once in a very short amount of time.
That was Bill Schneider, Chief Research Scientist for BD Canine. The company utilizes proprietary technology and develops training aids that have the scent of the targeted viruses. The result is a harmless substance with a highly specific scent that dogs are systematically trained to detect, and one that they can distinguish between different diseases.
When we first got into this, we thought, like everybody else who did disease detection canines, that dogs detected the response of the host. So if you're looking for a human disease, the dogs would detect volatile organic compounds, what we call VOCs, that were a response to being sick with the virus or being sick with cancer. And similarly in plants, when we first got started, we figured, well, what we're picking up here is the tree's response to being sick with HLB or being sick with a virus or something like that. As we got farther into it, and particularly as we started to work on plumpox, which is a virus that affects a lot of prunus species, including almonds, we learned that you could train a dog to directly detect the pathogen itself. And those are the proprietary techniques that we sort of keep a little bit secret to ourselves. But really, that's our goal every time we set out, is to train the dog to do exactly what a PCR machine does, which is direct detection of the pathogen. And when you do that, using the techniques that we developed, you can make it just as specific and just as sensitive as any PCR machine, because you're no longer asking it to get a generalized disease response that could be common among different viruses. Instead, you're telling it, this is what red blotch smells like. Go find me some red blotch. This is what leaf roll smells like. Go find me some leaf roll. This is what plumpox smells like. And the dogs are pretty good at that, and they have no problem with it.
The company takes in dogs that are around 18 months old and puts them through two sets of training, the first being behavioral training, according to Snyder.
This is what I want you to do when you find a target. When you do this, you'll get rewarded. And our dogs are trained to sit next to a target. Once they've learned that little trick, then we start to introduce to them what the target scent they're going to be rewarded for is. In the case of the grape viruses, for example, we have training materials that represent the scent of the two viruses. We first show the dog this, they sit next to it, reward them, then we show them a healthy sample plus this, and we teach them you have to distinguish between these two, and they learn to sit next to the sample that has the virus in it. And we keep adding on until you get to a point where that dog is working simulated vineyards or simulated fields, depending on what the crop is. The whole process can take up to, on average, it takes about 8 weeks. But dogs are like kids. Some of them are faster, some of them are slower. And once they're in to that phase and they have been what we call tuned up, we do a validation with them, make sure they're operating at the level of efficiency we expect them to operate at, which is at least 95% or better. And then we deploy them. And the fun thing about dogs is they're nice little artificial intelligence machines. They learn to get better and better and find less and less of their target, because to them, this is one gigantic game. This is the best day of their lives. Every time they find that target scent, they sit down, they get rewarded, they get some playtime with their favorite person, who happens to be their handler. So realistically, they think it's wonderful, and they get better and better at it the more that they do.
The dogs are feasible to be used on a commercial scale. However, their services do need to be targeted, as the dogs often need to rest in between sessions of sniffing.
What we typically have in agricultural settings is a team with a dog with two dogs, three dogs with one single handler. That handler will keep switching the dogs out to keep them fresh, and they'll go back into an air-conditioned van, and the handler will get to stay out in the sunshine and keep working. And they just keep plugging through. at a rate of about 1 second per individual plant. And it can go a little faster, it can go a little slower, but generally speaking, to keep your accuracy at the window you want, you need to give them a little chance to check everything. So it's about 1 second per plant. If you're talking about trees that spread farther apart, then there's a little bit of distance time in between there. Realistically, the thing that actually wears them out the most is if there are a lot of positives and there are a lot of rewards, because that means they're going to stop. It slows the process down. They're going to get a toy. They're going to play a little bit of tug with it. And that wears them out just as much as running does. So we know we can go through, for example, 2,000 citrus trees in a day pretty easily. And you can do that day after day. But you're going to have to take a break somewhere in the middle of the week. So we think realistically with one team, you can cover about 7,500, 8,000 trees per week. That doesn't begin to dip into the sheer amount of, for example, grape production. But if you combine that with knowledge of your pathogen, so if you understand the biology of how things work, you can focus your dog searches on areas where it's most likely to be an issue. If your disease comes in on the edge of a vineyard, you bring your dogs to the edge and check there first. If there's nothing there, you don't have to worry about things in the middle. So with a focused effort, yeah, this can be an effective tool, particularly if you're catching things in the early stages, so it's not endemic everywhere.
Vineyard operators or other ag operators interested in learning more about this type of approach to disease detection can visit www.bdk9.com. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.